to follow before they can release the shipment. There are reasons why they flag, or sometimes they're random inspections. We don't know.
Mm-hmm.
But unfortunately, the brokers cannot assist with expediting that in any way, or telling the client or guaranteeing the client that that won't happen.
I see. So if a client who talk to a custom broker and who told them that, oh, we can help you to get released from being flagged or seized, means those brokers are not reliable. And I know that the stories and the experiences that you shared, a lot of clients that they came to you from being tricked or getting more penalties from working with other custom brokers. So that could be one of the cases, right?
Well, if you're whatever that you're importing, if it's compliant and it's regulated, then you have nothing to be worried about.
Yeah.
But if there is, that's when you need to be worried about, right?
Okay.
Is that you're going to get a penalty.
Right.
Because okay. if CBSA is inspecting, like I said, they have their reasons to why they're inspecting. Mm-hmm. Even the ones that they randomly flag, it just happens.
I see.
So that's, and in this day and age, there's a lot of illegal stuff happening,
yes.
you know, across nation and country. So it's really hard to say. Like, that's why we cannot guarantee any, no broker can guarantee you that your shipment will get an easy pass through customs. It doesn't work that way.
Yeah. So if anybody promised you that, oh, they can get you to get out of this situation, then don't believe them, right? Because they probably just wanted to land the deal by overly promising. I see. And I wonder, like, in that case, we do want to talk about the regulations, because the regulations constantly change, and we can put ourselves under the risk because of the changes. However, we can also benefit from those regulations. Mm-hmm. And I remember that you mentioned about we can save a lot of money by legally avoiding paying some revenues and some costs, right?
Yeah.
So I wonder if you could share, how can importers legally achieve zero duty using trade agreements?
Okay, so the trade agreements. So importers can reduce costs by leveraging free trade agreements, the FTAs.
Right.
The agreements like CUSMA. So CUSMA is a free trade agreement between United States, Canada, and Mexico.
Right.
Or CETA for preferential, usually 0% off duty, but it depends on the tariff rates. There are duty deferral programs, and
there's some like TTP or something like
CPTP.
Right. Like, I think you mentioned about them, but like, basically those are the regulations and agreements that the countries, within those few countries that they make to help the business owners, cross-border business owners, and those global entrepreneurs to legally avoid paying revenues, right?
Yeah. So, like I said, importers can leverage from free trade agreements, FTAs, like CUSMA, the United Canada States and Mexico, CETA, which is the Canada and EU, the European Union,
right,
and the CPTPP, which is the Comprehensive and Progressive Agreement for Trans-Pacific Partnership. How we can leverage this is that the certificate of origin is essential for securing one of these trade agreements.
Right.
And you need to be compliant as well when you are using these trade agreements. So compliance requires verifying complex rules of origin before certification. So you can just fill it out and say it's made in the U.S. and qualify for duty exemption. You have to ensure that your product is made in the U.S. to qualify for that duty exemption. So don't just fill it out, verify it. And the way you can verify that is the producer. Whoever is manufacturing or producing, they're the ones who can tell you if that product is wholly manufactured at their facility, or say if a product is combined of multiple items that's been imported from all around the world.
Mm.
So they're things that importers need to ensure and keep in mind before they can say, okay, yes, this qualifies for exemption.
Right. Okay. Thank you so much. And I think that regulation is a very important part in the knowledge for us to acknowledge that verifying it, but then, you know, if you are telling the truth, mm-hmm. You can avoid those. Don't overly pay. If you don't report it, then you probably have to pay for it. And another way that we talk about is duty deferral and drawback. Mm-hmm. And so, first of all, I would love to you to explain to us what are the differences between those two, and or what are they? And then I would also want you to share with us what are the smartest ways to manage cash flow through duty deferral or drawback.
So duty deferral is so it improves cash flow by utilizing CBSA duty deferral and drawback programs to recover duties on imported goods later exported. So if you had goods that you had imported and you had paid duties on it, and then now you're re-exporting it back, that is an option where you can use a... In our organization, we have a team who does that. They're the consulting department. So they specialize in these things. So I cannot
overly taking their duties, but I understand.
Yeah, I cannot explain a lot about this, mm-hmm. but from my understanding is that our team specializes in doing things. So, but this okay. is one of the options is if you have imported goods and you are sending it back, you could qualify for duty deferral. But of course, if you're going to come and ask us, our organization for assistance, we would consult, we'll forward you to a consulting department who would assist you with that.
Yeah, so basically it is a very professional, I think, knowledge or tasks to do. So even people who work in the company might not really understand it. So if you are somebody who really need this service, then it's better to consult with the professionals.
Yes.
And then they have a specific department to deal with that.
Yes, because it's a process. It's not just filling out a form and submitting it to CBSA.
Yeah.
It's a process, and it could be a lengthy depending on what it is that you are requesting that service for.
I see. Mm-hmm. So how can companies structure shipping and brokerage to lower the total cost, though?
So for shipping costs, that's not something that a broker handles. But what we handle is that if you are using our services, how we negotiate brokerage rate is depend on the volume of the shipment, the type of the shipment, the value of the shipment. Sorry, I said that twice.
Yeah, that's okay. Yeah.
And also the brokerage determined fees are determined by the volume of the shipment, the mode of the transportation, HS classification, and other government department, which is the OGD requirements, and the number of line items. So that's what is required before we can negotiate a brokerage rate for any importer.
I see. Well, I understand this is very professional and very technical to people, because to me, I did a lot of homework to be able to understand and ask questions. So not to mention about other people. But I understand that a lot of people, especially for, at least from what I understand, Chinese business owners, even they never done business before, trying to get into the cross-border or international business, especially e-commerce. So those knowledge, although they're very hard to understand, they're very technical when you first knowing them, but they are so helpful to avoid some costs, potential costs, especially as a first-time importers, right? So to help us understand those technical things or understanding the potential damages or benefits from this, could you share with us a specific real case where those non-resident importer structure removed broader frictions?
Mm-hmm. Say, for example, a U.S. toy manufacturer. Mm. We'll use that as a sample. And so a non-resident importer. So what is a non-resident importer? A non-resident importer is an importer who's not a Canadian resident.
Okay.
However, the government does allow non-residents to act as importers in Canada.
Mm.
To qualify to be a non-resident importer, of course, now with the CARM implementation, it is required for even a non-resident importer to have their business registered in the CompLine portal. So what happens is that, for instance, a toy manufacturer utilizing the non-resident importer program can significantly reduce border friction, such as unforeseen costs and shipping delays, by serving as the importer of record. So the manufacturer gains better control over landed costs, simplifies cross-border transactions, and enhances the overall customer experience, including paying their duties and taxes directly to CBSA via the CompLine portal.
Okay.
So that's what a non-resident importer can do.
Mm.
Yeah.
Okay, so what happened exactly with this U.S. Toy manufacturer case study? Like, what is the story, if you could recall, or if you can find other stories that for normal people to understand the real case study, like what happened and this person benefit from your service or this company got penalties from not having the good help?
It would be, this is just an example. It's not an experience, but an example using this scenario. I can say, if it's a non-resident importer importing toys into Canada,
right,
and they're using a brokerage service, that is as Summit Customs Brokers, and what we would do is that we would assist the non-resident importer the same as we would assist a Canadian importer, a resident importer. So all the information, all the regulations, all the services and assistance that we provide a Canadian importer, we would provide that to a non-resident importer as well. So if we have a Chinese non-resident importer, the services would be the same for them. And the way they can save money is, as I said, that non-resident importers, such as unforeseen costs, so they can reduce broader friction, such as unforeseen costs and shipping delays, by serving as the importer of record.
Okay.
So they become more visible of their shipment moving from origin to destination.
I see. Well, thank you so much. I thought those knowledge would be really helpful for first time, especially for beginners who's trying to choose the services, who doesn't understand that those process after their goods got out from their own country and get into or imported into a new country, that there's a lot of things that could happen. Mm-hmm. So it's not really like you sit at home and click something in front of your laptop and everything is down, because that's what exactly I saw on social media. It's like people trying to teach other people that, hey, you can do the e-commerce, you can just put your own thing on Shopify or on Amazon, at least from some the Chinese social media platform. And I saw a lot that they buy my course, because I'm going to tell you where you just need a laptop and sit at home, click something, and you will start to make money. And the thing is, it's not that easy. Otherwise, everybody is getting into this field, and we don't have custom brokers or agencies like your company to do all those complex process. So we wanted to warn people, Oh, there are a lot of pitfalls that you can fall into. So it's not like you have to pay money to hire the big agencies to do complicated process. But please make sure that you wanted to check out their website and check out the information before you choose to invest in this area, right? So, well, like, after all this professional and technical knowledge, I do and I have to ask some questions to understand you as a professional female. What challenges you met in this industry, and also as a female, we have a lot of backlash and obstacles when we're trying to negotiate for better offers with clients, with our senior colleagues, or with our boss. Mm-hmm. Could you share some of that?
Yeah, for sure. As a woman demanding in sectors like this, like a customs broker in logistics, for me, my experience has been the motherhood penalty.
Mm.
So basically what it is, when you have a family and you're a single mom, there's a lot. There's a lot personally, and there's a lot professionally.
Okay.
And what happens is that personally, you end up taking extra time off because you have to accommodate your family at home. But at the same time, what that does is that it takes you away from your professional job, from opportunities and growth, and it's just not fair.
Yeah, I know. Like, that's it feels like weird, because for women to say, hey, it is not fair, it sounds like nowadays it's already become a challenge itself, right?
From, again, this was an experience for me in the past. However, the organization that I work for now, I feel I'm truly blessed that I work for an organization where they recognize potential. And what they do is that my seniors, my superiors, I've been with the company for 10 years, and I have grown. And I have grown because of the good leadership that was provided. And even with these, you know, the motherhood penalty, the obstacles of, what my family was requiring from me, my work provided the option to work from home. And, that helped me accommodate my personal life as well.
Right.
At the same time, you know, as life is going on, they're also encouraging me to, you know, break boundaries. I come from a background of customs brokerage. I do daily data operations. And from there, I was offered this position, a sales position, where I am in the front of clients on behalf of my organization, trying to get business and to let our importers know that why are we different than other customs brokers, and what is the service that we provide, and things like that. So, I've always been behind the desk, never up front. So this has been a journey and an experience. But at the same time, as much as it is a challenge, I'm grateful again for my organization for providing training, not only for mentorship or leadership, but people speaking skills training as well. So I want to say that, again, I'm blessed and privileged to be working for an organization that supports women like that. So it truly is a blessing.
Yeah, thank you for sharing. I really understand this. And I went on the social media before, and I realized there's a lot of topics and the noises that kind of make male and female against with each other. But I have to say, it's really not just about gender. There are a lot of males, especially, I have to say, from our audiences group, from, like, I'm not trying to just kind of, you know, please them. They are truly supportive. They give us a lot of compliments. A lot of them are males. So there are people, and also the males that I met in my life. Yeah, some of them, no matter what their gender is, they're just kind of being haters. But then a lot of them, they are very supportive. They are bothered by all those gender theories. I would say it's really not about the gender. It's more about the structure that the society, the environment that from the history that caused, right? Mm-hmm. For example, like females, when in negotiations, we turn to be asked by the investors or the clients with prevented focus questions, like, oh, how can you make sure that you do not lose money from what will one or in the future plan, where males tend to be asked for promoted or promotion focused questions, where like, what do you see, how many money, or what is the future plan, how much you could expand for the company in the future. So those are the differences. Mm-hmm. And I would say it's really not about like if the investors or the clients are male or female. It's more about the overall the overall structure or most of the society saw and the image put on us. So those are from the research that I read, and I feel like it definitely fits the reality, the real experiences.
In the past, that definitely has been the case where it's the gender that's being recognized for promotion, for, you know, seniority. But in this day and age, from my experiences, I have learned that at least for me, where I am now, I see a balance.
Mm.
And it's not just how masculine you look, it's about what you have here.
Yeah, I do agree. I feel like I would call it more like a revolution that happened in definitely not just China, but I think this revolution happened faster or slower in other countries than in China. But like in China, I would see it as more like a revolution where people start to feel like this is unfair.
Mm-hmm.
And the funny thing is like the female group feel this is super unfair by being asked, how do you balance the family and the professional duties? And the males also feel super unfair because they feel like I have to take the most heavy role or the most duties in the professional way because I have to support for the family. This is the whole society expect for males. However, people don't understand me and then they still blame me. And also there are some like special requirements for engagement and marriage to Chinese males. So everybody feels unfair. And this is really funny. So after this revolution, I think it might be a good thing because people find that they have more choices to choose whoever agrees with you. Mm-hmm. And because everybody put their voice on the table, and then we probably understand each other's situation more and trying to be taking some responsibilities and share the responsibilities, right?
Definitely. For me professionally, I want to say as much as, you know, my male coworkers, my seniors, you know, the women too are working hand in hand. We are a team who gets the job done. Doesn't matter if I don't know the answer, the other one will help me assist and you know, work through that. Other than like in the past, it would be like, you know, it would be more men taking that initiative. Okay, you should know. But no, it's not, like I said, it's not the masculine. It's what you know, the knowledge. And it could be shared equally.
Yes, I do see this environmental or societal perspective getting changed. However, there are still a lot of voices, or there are still group of people they have the bias towards to what males should do and what females should do. So as a professional female, I wonder what the perspectives or what the tips for female professionals to prove themselves that, oh, I'm actually no worse than a different gender for my professional work.
I honestly don't think of being biased or being different. I come to work my experience and my growth in the last 10 years in this company, it has been focusing on myself.
Right.
Doing what I can do best. My thing is, I take challenges. If there's something that I don't know, I want to know. So then that's been my my thing, where I like challenges. And I think that's what my superiors saw in me, and you know, encouraged me to grow with the company. I've never seen something that, you know, that a male should do and, you know, a female shouldn't do. It's never been that for me. I think it's just mentally we have to teach ourselves. The more we think about it, the more we're going to feed that, you know, the biased conversation, the female, the male, or the gender equality conversation, the more you're going to think and, you know, put words into it. But for me, you know, I'm trying not to think that way. I'm trying to think being equal.
I remember you shared with me before that you just need to be professional. You just need to be knowledgeable and solving the problems for your clients, for people who work with you. Then that way you don't have to talk about the equality or gender equality topics, right? You just show how professional you are. That's very convincible, right?
Yes, because that's what we're supposed to be doing, is our job, right?
Yeah.
We need to, if there's a problem, figure out what the solution is for the problem, rather than sitting and wondering, okay, you know, I'm a female, I can't do this.
Yeah.
It's the male question. You know, my thing, even at work, like, usually my general manager, if we have a new employee or there's, you know, movement of computers or something in the office, he'd usually be the one doing it. But if it's not there, I just get up and do it. I don't think it's something that needs to be separated. So anyway, those are my thoughts and my point of views and my experiences. I'm sure everybody has their own personal experiences and you know, and for me, like I said, I'm blessed where I've been working. I'm sure, and I have worked for places where I was not happy. So I'm sure there are people out there who's not happy with, you know, certain things and certain behaviors. A lot of it is mentality, right? The more you feed that topic and that conversation, the more you get consumed in it.
Right. Yeah. And the motherhood experience did bring resilience to you and make you become someone who has better leadership skills, right?
Definitely. Like, for me, it was like taking necessary leave for family. It required me to expend effort and, you know, resource to build client pipelines and commissions, leading to immediate financial strain. The key challenges for working parents, especially single mothers, are, you know, like I said, rigid work structure, inadequate childcare support, and then I've even experienced, you know, with the government, like the insufficient government and community assistance. Many full-time working mothers are ineligible for financial aid just because you work full-time and then the government is structured in a way that there is strict income threshold. So those have been my experiences. However, all it did is strengthen me to push harder, to grow in my professional life, and to, you know, strive to make as much money as I can to support my family. So as much as there are the downfalls where I couldn't get this, I couldn't get that, I tell myself, okay, I couldn't, that's okay, but I can push forward. I still have, you know, two hands, two legs. I can work full time. I can work extra hours. I can do whatever I need to push myself to get there. So all the downfalls, all these setbacks, all it's doing is teaching me to get stronger and push forward.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you so much. And that's a wonderful conversation and very encouraging. And that's all the time we have for today. A huge thanks to Natasha for joining us and helping us decode the hidden negotiation logic behind customs compliance compliance and global trade. If you'd like to learn more about Summit International Trade Services Custom Broker, you can visit summitcustomsbrokers.com for more information. And special shout out for our lovely staff here and CJSF for making this broadcast possible. And stay tuned, Jacob's Music Show is coming next. And this is CJSF 90.1 FM on Burnaby Mountain. I'm Charlotte, and I will see you next week.